Welcome to Jury Duty. I'm your host, Carrie Antholis. Our new season explores the criminal trial stemming from the tragic death of Ahmaud Arbery, a 25-year-old black man who was pursued by three white men, Travis McMichael, Greg McMichael, and William Roddy Bryan, and eventually was shot to death by one of those men, Travis McMichael. On our last episode, we presented the first half of Prosecutor Jesse Evans' questioning of Georgia Bureau of Investigation agent Richard Dial at a hearing where Judge Wallace Harrell would determine whether there was probable cause for the three men to face trial for felony murder. We concluded that episode with Prosecutor Evans asking Agent Dial about the video which brought this tragedy to national attention.
At some point in time, I know that a video was started by Mr. Bryan. Is that accurate?
That is, yes, sir.
And he's confirmed as much, and we have copies of that video from his cell phone, correct? That's
correct, yes, sir.
There's been portions of that video that were played widely on television, but there's actually other portions to that video as well, correct?
That is correct.
We'll present the rest of Agent Dial's testimony at this hearing right after the break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Prosecutor Jesse Evans continued by asking Agent Dial about the contents of the video shot by defendant William Bryan.
Can you please articulate for the court what you were able to see and confirm with Mr. Bryan about what he did as Mr. Arbery was heading down Holmes Road away from Mr. Bryan's vehicle?
Yeah, so Mr. Bryan's pursuing Mr. Arbery down Holmes Road, again with the intention of trying to catch up to him and block him in. At this point, while going down Holmes Road, Mr. Bryan turns on his cell phone camera and begins to try to videotape Mr. Arbery. Mr. Arbery stops. Now, at this time, the McMichaels have turned off of Zellwood and are coming down from Holmes Road. So you've got one vehicle coming one way down Holmes Road and another vehicle coming another way, and Mr. Arbery is in between. So at some point, Mr. Arbery turns around and starts heading back towards Mr. Bryan. Based upon the statement, it appears that Mr. McMichael is coming. Mr. Arbery's running, sees Mr. McMichael's truck, and then turns around and runs back by Mr. Bryan's truck. Mr. Bryan gets out of the way as Arbery runs past him, and then he sees the McMichaels come forward. Now, at this point in the video, Mr. Bryan has put the video down, so you don't have video of this sequence of events. But this is according to Mr. Bryan's statement, that Arbery runs past his truck, then the McMichaels come past his truck. Then Mr. Bryan pulls out and again goes back down in the direction of that Mr. Arbery had traveled.
Before we leave this topic here, was any of this captured on the video before the phone was put down? Could you actually see Mr. Arbery trying to evade the truck?
Yes, sir. You can.
Here, Prosecutor Evans begins to lay the groundwork for probable cause that the defendants committed the statutory crime of false imprisonment.
What happens when the McMichaels truck gets ahead of the victim?
Their vehicle gets ahead of Mr. Arbery, then they stop their vehicle. And this is almost at the intersection of Sotillo Drive and Holmes Road. They stop.
Is this a public roadway?
It is.
Where is Mr. Bryan's vehicle located during this portion of the chase?
Mr. Bryan's vehicle is behind Mr. Arbery. Mr. Arbery at this point is between Travis McMichael's vehicle and Mr. Bryan's vehicle.
Is Mr. Bryan able to video any portion of what happens next?
He is.
Have you reviewed that video and do you have it?
I do, and I have.
Can you please describe the chronology of events after the McMichaels parked their vehicle in the middle of this public roadway as Mr. Arbery approached the back of that vehicle?
Yes, I can. Mr. Bryan picks up the phone, has been videotaping the whole time, and holds it up so you have a view. You see Mr. Arbery running down Holmes Road, going towards Sotillo Drive. You see Travis McMichael's truck is parked in the road. Travis McMichael, the driver's side door is open. Travis McMichael is there. It is apparent to me he is holding a firearm pointed. Then Mr. Arbery is running He then apparently sees Travis Michael in front of him. Then he changes direction to go around the passenger side of the vehicle.
Rather than going to the driver's side where you had seen Travis McMichael with the shotgun, he's now going to the opposite side of that truck that's parked in this public roadway.
That's correct. He's going around the truck.
What happened after that?
Travis McMichael then moved from the driver's side where he's actually standing. When you open a driver's side door, the door is at his back initially in the video, and he's got the shotgun. He then positions himself around the driver's side door towards the front of the truck. You see Mr. Aubrey running alongside the passenger side. And again, you see Travis McMichael has repositioned himself along the front of the truck. Mr. Aubrey then comes up to a position, sees Travis McMichael, then makes a decision and turns and decides to engage Travis McMichael.
At this moment, we get to the part of the video that brought this tragedy to national attention.
What happens after that?
As he turns and goes towards Travis McMichael, you hear a shot. Then you see Travis McMichael moving backwards with Mr. Aubrey. Obviously, they are engaged in a physical confrontation at this point. They go off the screen. You then hear a second shot where you see blood and spray into the screen, a mist of it. Then they come back in to the view of the camera. Mr. Aubrey is striking Travis McMichael. There's a struggle going on. Then you see a third shot occur, the firearm being lowered down like that. When you see the, after the third shot, you then see Mr. Aubrey get past Travis McMichael and continue running down Holmes, almost right there at the intersection, and then he falls.
You articulated three separate gunshots here, correct?
Yes.
Where was Greg McMichael at the time that this was going on?
Greg McMichael was in the back of the pickup truck. When the situation began, he was on the phone.
At this point, have they finally called 911?
They have, yes.
This 911 call by Greg McMichael was logged by the dispatcher as an unidentified male caller at 1:14 p.m. on February 23, 2020. The caller said to the dispatcher, quote, "I'm out here at Satilla Shores. There's a black man running down the street," end quote. When the dispatcher asked, quote, "Where in Satilla Shores?" end quote, the caller replied, quote, "I don't know what street we're on," end quote. The dispatcher then heard the caller yelling at someone who was apparently running on the road in front of him. Quote, "Hey, stop. What are you? Watch that. Stop, damn it. We want to talk to you," end quote. The dispatcher tried to re-engage the caller, but there was no response until the line finally went dead. Mr. Albanese's call to 911, alerting authorities to Mr. Arbery's presence on the construction property, was placed at 1:08 p.m. Greg McMichael placed his 911 call, marking the moment his son Travis fired the shots that killed Mr. Aubrey, at 1:14 p.m. The pursuit and killing of Ahmaud Aubrey took 6 minutes. Greg McMichael's 911 call began in the moments when Ahmaud Aubrey made the decision to challenge his son Travis by trying to take Travis's shotgun away from him. The call ended as his son was shooting Mr. Aubrey. At no time after the shooting did either one of the McMichaels or Mr. Bryan call 911 to request medical assistance for Mr. Aubrey. Prosecutor Evans goes on to ask Agent Dial several questions about exactly where Greg McMichael was during this final confrontation, and also about the type of weapon that Greg McMichael was carrying. According to Agent Dial, Greg McMichael stayed in the pickup truck's open cargo bed, holding a cell phone in one hand and a Smith & Wesson 357 Magnum revolver in his other hand. Greg McMichael identified himself as a, quote, "former Glynn County police officer," end quote, to the two current Glynn County officers who were first to arrive at the scene. He also told them that his gun had been issued by the Glynn County Police Department. Prosecutor Evans then moves on to question Agent Dial about the nature of Ahmaud Arbery's gunshot wounds and Travis McMichael's weapon.
You mentioned three gunshot wounds in this particular case. Can you articulate for the court and the benefit of our record where those gunshot wounds were to Mr. Aubrey's body?
I can. Mr. Aubrey suffered a gunshot wound to the center of the chest. He also suffered a gunshot wound to the upper left chest around the armpit area here. From the front to the back. He then suffered a shotgun wound to his right wrist.
You're aware, though, that certain items of evidence of significance were collected in this case by Glynn County Police Department?
I am, yes, sir.
How about the firearm?
Yes. Well, Travis McMichael's firearm was collected by the Glenn County Police Department.
And how many spent shell casings do we have from that shotgun?
Three.
Two of them were expelled. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
What about the third one? Where did that remain?
It was still within the chamber of the weapon.
And give a description briefly for the benefit of the court and the record about what type of firearm that was used to shoot Mr. Arbery.
The 870 Remington 870 12 gauge shotgun is a pump action shotgun, meaning that once a shot is fired, the front forearm of the weapon has to be operated to eject the spent shell, and then the forearm has to be operated again to load a new live round in.
During Travis McMichael's interview with police, did he make any admissions about firing the fatal gunshots in this particular case?
He did. He admitted firing the weapon three times.
And the first shot that he articulated, where did he indicate to police that that shot landed?
The chest, Mr. Aubrey's chest.
So the first shot that Travis McMichael said that was inflicted on Mr. Aubrey was one of the chest wounds that you'd articulated here, correct?
That is correct.
And is there video evidence that you saw that tends to corroborate, based on your observation, that that is an accurate statement, that the chest wound was, or at least one of the chest wounds, was the first shot that was fired at the deceased victim, Mr. Aubrey?
Yes, sir. There is.
Can you articulate to the court how that is, that you're able to see that?
After the first shot, again, you see a struggle between Travis McMichael and Mr. Aubrey. Mr. Aubrey, while he was wearing a white shirt during this incident, during that struggle, you see the front of his shirt is saturated with blood.
After Agent Dial finishes describing the evidence contained in the video recorded by Mr. Bryan, Prosecutor Evans asks Dial to recap for the judge, the finder of fact in this hearing, the events which led to the killing of Mr. Aubrey, this time allowing the agent to point out for the judge where on a map of the area each of the critical aspects of the pursuit and shooting took place. As Prosecutor Evans leads Agent Dial through this recapitulation of the facts, he periodically asks Agent Dial to highlight facts which take on special legal significance in the context of this case.
Describe what is depicted here for the benefit of Judge Harrell.
This is the Sotillo Shores neighborhood.
And then show generally the entrance into Sotillo Shores that you had talked about.
This is the entrance up here to Sotillo Shores.
And you had talked generally about a house under construction. Let's talk about the locations that you talked about during your testimony before we go into the chronology a little bit more.
Certainly. Again, this is Tiller Drive. It comes down. This would be approximately the residence that was under construction, and that would belong to Mr. Larry English. This is marked as 230 Sotillo Drive. This is Greg and Travis McMichael's residence, where they resided. Down Burford, it would be within this area here, is William Bryan's residence along Burford.
And then what about Holmes Drive? Do you see that depicted here as well?
Yes, this is Sotillo Drive here. This is Holmes Road. The intersection, the shooting incident took place about here.
Based on the chronology that you have just described for the court, please show where Mr. Aubrey would have initially entered this neighborhood.
He would enter the neighborhood from up here, which is the entrance. Again, along Sotillo Drive is where the house under construction is, and that's where you first see him. We have him on video. He's coming along Sotillo Drive in this direction and coming into the house.
Certainly.
Again, Mr. Aubrey comes out of the residence under construction, then heads south along Sotillo Drive. You see him on the video as he comes in this direction. This, again, is Greg McMichael and Travis McMichael's house.
Agent Dial states that after leaving the construction site, Mr. Aubrey was running into the Sotillo Shores neighborhood, which may signify that he was continuing a jog rather than running out of the neighborhood, which might have suggested that he was fleeing the construction site and that he had some sort of criminal intent.
Greg McMichael's statement is that he goes in, tells Travis, they then grab their weapons. On the video, you see Travis, what appears to be Travis McMichael's truck, come off the 230 still drive and go in this direction in pursuit of Mr. Aubrey. According to their statements, Mr. Aubrey then comes down Sotillo Drive. He then goes onto Burford Road. Again, he comes by Mr. Bryan's house, which would be in this area here. There's video. He's going by Travis McMichael's truck at this point. Then, according to statements, Mr. Aubrey goes down Buford. Travis McMichael is pursuing him down Buford. Before they get to the turn here, Mr. Aubrey turns back and goes back north along Buford. This is when Greg McMichael gets out of his vehicle. In the meantime, Mr. Bryan has decided to go in pursuit himself. He has entered his truck. He sees Mr. Aubrey coming down Buford. He pulls out in the roadway and attempts to block him in and stop him. Mr. Aubrey goes around his truck. At this point, Mr. Bryan is in pursuit of Mr. Aubrey, trying to stop him, trying to detain him. Travis McMichael has made the decision to, instead of going back this way, to go around Buford to when it turns into Zellwood here, and to come back along all the way up Zellwood and turn down Holmes Road. Travis McMichael's statement is to try to cut Mr. Aubrey off.
And was Mr. Aubrey ever able to leave this neighborhood based on the evidence that you have?
No, sir. He was killed before he exited the neighborhood.
Prosecutor Evans appears to be laying the groundwork here for the judge to find probable cause that Travis and Greg McMichael, along with Mr. Bryan, committed the crime of falsely imprisoning Ahmaud Arbery. According to Georgia law, quote, a person commits the offense of false imprisonment when, in violation of the personal liberty of another, he arrests, confines, or detains such person without legal authority, end quote.
Why don't you describe, first of all, had Mr. Aubrey been able to make it to the intersection here of Holmes, and I guess that's Satilla, had he made a right there, had he been able to make a right, where would he have been able to go?
He would have gone up Satilla Drive and out of the neighborhood.
And what's across from this neighborhood that you've given some testimony about before?
Highway 17 is here, and across Highway 17 is the entrance into Mr. Aubrey's neighborhood. It goes back into where he lives.
His neighborhood is right across the highway?
Yes.
Describe where generally the sequence of events occurred in terms of the fatal shooting of Mr. Aubrey on Holmes Drive.
So Travis McMichael at some point has gotten in front of Mr. Aubrey. He actually stops right about here near the intersection of Holmes Road and Satilla Drive. That's where he stops his vehicle. It is facing towards the intersection of Satilla Drive with the rear of the vehicle facing back down Holmes Road. Mr. Bryan, from the video, is coming down Holmes Road. Mr. Aubrey is between the two trucks.
He's trapped in between the two?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Bryan, then you see there's a slight curve in the vehicle, which would be approximately this curve here. Mr. Aubrey is coming towards Mr. McMichael's truck. Mr. McMichael is outside of the driver's side of the truck, armed with a shotgun at this point. Mr. Aubrey then comes, sees Mr. McMichael, changes and goes around the passenger side of the vehicle, not towards Travis McMichael, but around it. And then Travis McMichael changes his position to the front of the vehicle. And at that point is when Mr. Aubrey sees Travis McMichael change the position in front of the vehicle and then engages Mr. McMichael.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Having established that Travis McMichael was intent on confining and detaining Mr. Arbery under threat of physical harm, and that Mr. Arbery made multiple attempts to escape that confinement, Prosecutor Evans has laid the groundwork for asserting that Mr. Arbery's decision to engage Mr. McMichael was a legal act of self-defense, which, again, is defined by Georgia law as, quote, using force against another when and to the extent that he or she reasonably believes that such threat or force is necessary to defend himself or herself or a third person against such other's imminent use of unlawful force, end quote.
That's when the shooting took place.
Yeah, the first shot. Yes, sir. After the first shot, then, because Travis Michael doesn't back up during the first shot. After the first shot, there's physical confrontation. You see Travis Michael backing up. There is a physical altercation at this point. You see that you hear the second shot is off camera as well, but you do see the blood mist coming into the camera screen. Then you see then both Travis McMichael and Mr. Aubrey are fighting. They come back into the view of the screen, then you see the third shot.
But this is all, the altercation you talk about is all after that first shot to the chest that Travis McMichael made an admission about.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
I want to talk about statements of the defendants. There were statements of all three defendants that were given to a number of investigators in the case, including Glynn County Police Department.
That's correct.
First, focusing on Greg McMichael's statement, was there any body cam video obtained showing statements that he made to responding officers?
There was, yes, sir.
And just summarize any admissions or statements that he made to Glynn County police officers.
Greg McMichael pretty much relates on the body cam footage, and then later on, whenever he actually is interviewed on camera by the Glynn County Police Department, he makes admissions to seeing Mr. Aubrey running down the roadway. His statement to the effect is he didn't know Mr. Aubrey had stolen anything or not, but he had a gut feeling that Mr. Aubrey may have been responsible for thefts that were in the neighborhood previously. And he actually says gut. His instinct told him that. He then tells Travis McMichael. He then describes the pursuit of Mr. Aubrey. He says that during Greg McMichael's statement, he only hears two shots during his statement. It appears by looking at his description of events that he either didn't realize the first shot or didn't register it. He was admits to being on the phone with 911 when the shooting was occurring, pulling his weapon.
Did he make any admissions to you about Mr. Bryan at some point volunteering to join into this chase of Mr. Aubrey in the neighborhood, and how did he describe that?
Yeah, he described that Mr. Bryan was trying to block him in as well.
Okay. And at the point of the actual shooting itself, did Mr. Greg McMichael make any admissions to Glynn County investigators about any statements that he was making to Travis McMichael about what he sure shouldn't do?
Yes. He says on the body camera footage of the first officer, he tells him that he was telling Travis McMichael, don't shoot.
Despite that, do you have video footage showing that essentially Greg McMichael is covering Travis with a 357?
I do, yes, sir.
Was there a video footage, both body cam and also interview footage, of Travis McMichael and his assertions about what happened on this date?
Yes. Travis McMichael's interview was done at the Glynn County Police Department with him, where he went into detail.
Did Travis McMichael make any admissions about ordering the victim at gunpoint to try to get on the ground or anything like that?
Yes, he did.
Prior to the shooting?
Prior to the shooting, yes, sir.
And what about any admissions that were made about the fatal shooting itself?
He admits to firing his shotgun three times. He says that all three shots struck the victim, and he said that the first shot was to the chest of the victim.
Finally, as Prosecutor Evans brings his presentation of Agent Dial's testimony to a close, he asks the GBI agent to recount a piece of evidence that will almost certainly be a central part of the prosecution's case, that Travis McMichael's killing of Ahmaud Arbery was malice murder, which Georgia law defines as causing the death of another human being with malice aforethought.
The last thing that I think I need to talk to you about, well, last couple things, this is going to involve an uncomfortable conversation, and you and I have talked about this a couple of times. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, we have.
You know that I want to ask you about a particular quote that Travis McMichael stated on the crime scene that was overheard by one of the defendants and shared with investigators prior to police arriving. Correct.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
And though this may be an uncomfortable conversation for the benefit of the court and for the record, we're making it clear that this is not your quote. It's not the GBI's quote. This is a quote from a statement of Mr. Bryan as to what he heard Travis McMichael say prior to police arriving. Correct?
Very much so. Yes, sir.
Understanding that, and understanding that it might be a little uncomfortable to talk about the words because it involves a curse word and something else, I need to ask you about that quote. Can you please articulate for the court what Mr. Bryan said he heard Travis McMichael say prior to police arriving and after the fatal shooting?
Yes. Mr. Bryan said that after the shooting took place, before police arrival, while Mr. Aubrey was on the ground, that he heard Travis McMichael make the statement, fucking n****.
On our next episode, we are going to continue the examination of this probable cause hearing with a look at the defense lawyer's questioning of Agent Dial. But first, to discuss the case and specifically Agent Dial's testimony at this preliminary hearing, we welcome Georgetown Law professor, MSNBC analyst, and one of the nation's most frequently consulted scholars on issues of race and criminal justice, Paul Butler. Let's speak for a moment about racism and the demonstrations of racism in this case, the evidence presented by Agent Dial and Prosecutor Evans for racial animus on the part of the defendants. Can you take us through that and its significance to the state's case against these men?
The prosecution has to establish a motive in order to get the jury to convict. That's not legally required, but as a practical matter, unless the prosecution has a persuasive story about why the defendants would have wanted to kill or harm Mr. Aubrey, the jury is unlikely to convict. And the prosecution's theory seems to be that the defendants incorrectly believed that Mr. Aubrey was committing a crime or had committed a series of crimes in the neighborhood, that he'd been responsible for what the defense claims was a series of burglaries. And since there's no evidence at all that Mr. Aubrey actually committed crimes like burglary at that location, the question is, well, why would the defendants think that he had? And the prosecution will say, because Mr. Aubrey was Black and these defendants suffered from racial stereotypes or implicit bias is at one point suggested by the investigator, which means that they basically thought because Mr. Aubrey was Black and because he was seen in the neighborhood that he was up to no good.
And what are some of the pieces of evidence of that racial animus or racial bias?
The smoking gun evidence, and smoking gun is both a tragic and literal metaphor in this case, is that right after Travis fired those shots into Mr. Aubrey's body, he used the N-word. So that testimony will or should have a powerful impact on the jury, because the question would be, why would you say that after you just wounded a person, unless you were a racist? And the suggestion will be that that act of shooting Mr. Aubrey was informed by his prejudice, by his bias. The connection between racism and Mr. Aubrey's death isn't as straightforward with regard to the other two defendants. So at the preliminary hearing, there was testimony that Travis McMichael had racist social media posts. The investigator said he'd also examined the social media post of Mr. Bryan and hadn't found anything racist on social media, but also the investigator had access to Mr. Bryan's phone, and there was some incident that was vaguely described in the preliminary hearing that suggested that Mr. Bryan might have said something racist or texted something racist. Again, it's pretty unclear from the preliminary hearing on his phone on one occasion. So that's a more tenuous connection. But when you're charged with felony murder, as all three defendants are, you can still be guilty of murder if you're not the trigger person. So as long as all the defendants were operating out of a common plan or scheme and committing a felony, and someone dies as a result of that felony, then they're all guilty of felony murder. It's interesting that the government is presenting two different theories of murder to the jury. So one is malice murder, which requires proof of intent, and the other is felony murder. And for felony murder, the prosecutors don't have to prove that the McMichaels and Mr. Bryan intended to kill Mr. Aubrey, but rather they intended to engage in another felony, and that while they were committing that other felony, known as the underlying felony, that Mr. Arbery died as a result of their actions.
There's one other thing worth considering and discussing on both of those points with respect to the racial animus that each of those men allegedly felt towards Black people and towards Mr. Arbery specifically, as well as towards the felony murder and malice murder charges. And that's that none of those men called 911 after Mr. Arbery was shot. They simply stood there and let the man bleed out until the police arrived, having been called by a fourth individual, Mr. Albanez, who lived across the street from the property that was under construction. Do you think that that fact, that these men just stood there and watched this man bleed out, will be evidence both of racial bias and of their intentions?
Certainly the prosecution will try to use the fact that the defendants didn't call 911 as more evidence that they were biased against Mr. Arbery, that in some ways they didn't regard him as a human being whose life was worth preserving. There rarely these days is explicit evidence of discrimination or racism or anti-Blackness because it's stigmatized. And so in a court of law, when that has to be proven, it's pieces of evidence, circumstantial evidence, that the prosecutors in this case hope will add up to a picture of all three of these men as being profoundly biased against Mr. Arbery, in part because he was African American.
And it's ironic that the critical evidence in this case, both the video and the statement by Mr. McMichael, as well as some of the ancillary statements by his father, Greg McMichael, come from the other defendant, Roddy Bryan. It's Roddy Bryan who reported to the police that Travis McMichael used the N-word. It's Roddy Bryan who shot the video that is the basis for a lot of the evidence that we have in the case. And then it's Greg McMichael himself who said that he was not aware of anything having been stolen from the vacant property. And it's both Greg McMichael and Travis McMichael who have averred that they have law enforcement experience and so should be schooled in how you engage a suspect with non-lethal force. So it's fascinating to me that these men are so unaware of the precariousness of their legal situation, that they've made numerous statements and engaged in numerous actions that increase exponentially the likelihood that they'll be convicted.
Of course, some of the incriminating statements made by the defendants occurred right after Mr. Arbery was killed, when they were talking to local police officers about what happened. And we have to remember that the local police treated the McMichaels and Mr. Bryant with a degree of deference and solicitude that's rather remarkable, considering the fact that Mr. Arbery's body was on the ground in front of them when they had this conversation. And in fact, not only did the defendants themselves fail to render any aid to Mr. Arbery as he bled out, but when the police first arrived, they also didn't immediately take steps to treat Mr. Arbery.
And of course, two prosecutors had to recuse themselves because they had connections to the McMichaels. And at least one of them has been indicted for misdemeanor obstruction of justice.
Right. And so it's possible that the defendants made these incriminating statements early on, because they were fairly confident that they were not going to be in any kind of criminal jeopardy or legal jeopardy based on what they've done.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Join us on our next episode, where we will continue our examination of this probable cause hearing and what it means to the overall case against the defendants in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery. You can find more information about this trial at crimestory.com. Jury Duty is created, produced, and hosted by yours truly, Harry Antholis. Our consulting producer is Paul Butler. This episode was written by Art Montrastelli. It was co-produced and edited by Chris Tarricum. Music was provided by Strike Audio. Trial audio courtesy of Law and Crime Networks. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next episode of Jury Duty, The Killing of Ahmaud Arbery.